Meeting of Parliament, Tuesday the 14th of July. We continue with answers to oral questions. We commence with question number 406. The questioner is the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the government set out what cycling safety courses are available for adults and children?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 407 and 408.
Question number 407, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the government state how it intends to roll out its £10 per capita investment into cycling infrastructure, awareness and safety programmes?
Question number 408, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government confirm what steps it has taken to establish a cycling promotion association and... Shall I wait for Minister Linata? Mm-hmm. Association and Ride to Work scheme.
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the government is committed to promoting cycling and walking as alternative forms of transport in Gibraltar. In addition to providing an ever-improving bus service and the promotion of electric or hybrid alternatives for personal transport where the use of cars can be avoided. To this end, the GSLP Liberals Manifesto for the election of 2019 contained a series of specific commitments designed to provide substance to our general commitment to the improvement of our urban environment. The commitment on establishing a cycling promotion association and a right-to-work scheme are two distinct matters which I will address separately. It is the government's view that the promotion of cycling in Gibraltar, along with the improvement of cycling infrastructures, awareness in the community, can only be improved by taking on board the views and ideas of those who are either advocates of cycling as an alternative for transport in Gibraltar and those who, day to day, make the choice to ride to work on their bicycles and more widely use their bicycles for practical purposes. It is also the case that the aspirations and vision of cyclists and cycling advocates alike need to be balanced with the developing needs of our community. To that end, Mr. Speaker, the government has already brought together, within months after our re-election in October, a transport advisory committee to discuss how best we can deliver on the government's policy objectives in tandem with ensuring the viability of our road traffic network. The transport committee met for the first time on the 5th of March 2020 and discussed issues as diverse as traffic, transport and parking in Gibraltar. Part of that discussion centered around the role of bicycles in the community and how best we can help to attract more and more cyclists to the area of using their bicycles for daily transport and not just for exercise. Mr. Speaker, it is true that we might not be able to agree with every point or every idea suggested in this context by members of the Transport Committee or indeed by a wider cross-section of the community, but our commitment to making this work is guaranteed. COVID-19, regrettably, has made meeting more than two times to date impossible, but I'm looking forward to hosting further socially distant meetings in a not-too-distant future. In relation to the part of question 408 dealing with the Cycle Promotion Association, then I can confirm that government is shortly to invite members of the cycling community to make representations to government about its view of the makeup and objectives of a cycle promotion association. It is the view of the government that promoting cycling must be a comprehensive exercise of investment in infrastructure, education and awareness, and of making it easier for our people to take to the bicycle. It is not the view of the government that dedicated and segregated cycle lanes are a panacea and the concept of wider adoption of cycling. Notwithstanding that view, we have exciting plans to deliver cycle lanes which will, in effect, offer protection to our cyclists through key routes in Gibraltar over the coming months as part of plans for Limewall Road, Chatham Counterguard, Europort Avenue and other roads in Gibraltar. The point to bear in mind, Mr. Speaker, is that we are planning to form this cycling promotion association to assist us with promoting cycling in Gibraltar and to help us calibrate plans we already have for investment in cycling going forward. It is in this regard that in relation to question 407, I can say that I'm confident that the GSLP Liberals' commitment of investing £10 per capita on cycling every year will easily be met. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that the investment in cycling over the next few years is likely to be significantly more than £10 per capita per annum. The investment in this regard will, as I have highlighted earlier in my answer, be the full range of initiatives needed to make cycling a natural choice for transport in Gibraltar. This will include investment in infrastructure, such as lanes and cycling parking, education and awareness. In the education or re-education context, and in answer to question number 406, government is examining options for the introduction of a program of adult cycling proficiency courses, possibly via the Pedal Ready initiative announced by my predecessor, the Honourable Paul Varan, which would see the government subsidise the delivery of courses in the community to those taking up cycling once again. In the awareness context, the government will, with the Cycling Promotion Association, seek to create a local campaign of TV and social media advertising relating to cycle safety and sharing the road, something the government considers an important component of pushing the cycling agenda. From an incentivization perspective, one option the government is currently considering, and which is the subject of the second part of question 408, is the introduction of a right-to-work scheme along the lines of the initiative available in the UK for a number of years, whereby employers would assist employees in the purchase of bicycles for commuting to work in exchange for a series of tax advantages. I say that this is only one option because the government is also keen to encourage employers and landlords in commercial premises to install quality cycling parking infrastructure to improve on facilities already available and actively being expanded by government. With the use of e-bikes on the up, we are keen to encourage the deployment of covered, protected and secure bicycle parking to remove yet another potential barrier to adoption. The £10 per capita commitment marks a watershed moment in the story of cycling in Gibraltar. It marks the first time a Gibraltarian government has made a cast-iron commitment to promoting this healthy, safe and practical form of transport. This investment allows us to measure and calibrate our commitment locally as we move to make Gibraltar a bike-friendly city. It also allows us to measure ourselves against other cities around the world looking to become bike-friendly, helping us to benchmark our efforts and tweak what we do by reference to it, and importantly, it is a starting point, a commitment on which I am sure we will continue to build, increasing that the level of funding per capita as required, and, as is likely to be the case, in response to what I am sure will be investment of a far higher level than the notional level of £10. Mr. Speaker, we are building on a vision of making Gibraltar a cleaner, greener place to live. The lockdown gave us a glimpse of a Gibraltar we didn't know we needed so much, missed so much. We are building a better Gibraltar. We are building a bike-friendly city. Mr. Speaker, just as we were elected to do, we are building the child-friendly city.
The answer to the questions that we put in relation to cycling. Of course, Mr. Speaker, everyone in our community wants a bike-friendly city so long as it's planned properly and deployed properly and efficiently within our community. What I would ask, first of all, there's only about three questions I'd like to ask. The first one is in relation to the Transport Advisory Committee. Does the Minister have to hand the members of that committee?
No, Mr. Speaker, I don't have that information at the moment. I mean, I know them, obviously I know the members, but I can't give you the full list at the moment.
I'm grateful for that answer, and I appreciate he doesn't have it before him, but does the committee comprise members of the cycling fraternity?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Insofar as we agree that clearly the views of cyclists need to be taken into account, and obviously cycling lanes are not a panacea, but I'd be grateful to understand how the Minister has taken a view in respect of Lionmoor Road and the quite colourful pictures and video presented by his ministry insofar as that project is concerned, when in fact not establishing the association in the first place in order to provide a conduit for that information and data and views back to the government so that they can properly plan this. Has the government proceeded on the basis of very limited involvement of a number of people from the fraternity, the cycling fraternity in our community, on that committee?
Mr. Speaker, what you see on Lionmoor Road is a concept. We will have a cycling lane there. We are seeking information. We are working with members of the cycling fraternity. We've spoken to, obviously, we're working with our own officials. These are early days. The member opposite says that we haven't planned properly. Well, let me say that is totally incorrect. We are taking our time. What he can't do is one day telling us that we're rushing into announcing plans and the next day telling us that we should be telling him more about how we're doing this. So this project will take approximately 2 years to deliver, Lime Wall Road. So in the meantime, we will continue planning. There are lots of possibilities. The only thing that we are telling you for sure at this moment is that there will be a cycling lane in Lime Wall Road.
I think the Minister will agree that Lime Wall Road, insofar as cycling is concerned, is a limited stretch of road compared to significant roads that we have in our community. Does the Minister have any further plans on how there can be, and we've discussed this, of course, in meetings that he has organised, a continuous cycling lane in Gibraltar that will provide for that thoroughfare of traffic from the border right to the end of the rock? If the Minister can clarify the basis upon which he's moving forward, it's because the Minister has set out very clearly that this is the vision, and that vision may well change and may well adapt over time. He's taking soundings from the cycling fraternity and other members of the community, presumably, and therefore we'd like a bit more information as to how this will extend further around our city.
Mr. Speaker, we're looking at a whole route round the rock for cycling. So, like I say, there's a lot of consultation that needs to be done at the moment, and we'll do that, and we'll get back to you when we're ready. This is not something that can be, then we could just give you within 2 or 3 weeks.
The Minister will appreciate the concern of many members of the community about this particular project, and although some support it, many do not support the idea of the closure, the restriction, and now the pilot study, or whatever now the government is describing this project as. But what I would say to him, therefore, is if these are early days, as he said, and he's taking his time, and that he will communicate the decision back to us, is it now foreseeable that this project will change in substance and form?
The project will be shaped by the consultation that we are taking, which is taking place at the moment.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask the Minister, in terms of transport, any cycle lanes? I think unless there's something I don't know about cycling, would you agree that cycling lanes are impractical in the upper town, and therefore what provision does he envisage to make to improve access to the upper town for those residents there, for example, extending the bus service?
Is it the bus service that you want to know about, or the cycling lane in the? Well, we haven't considered the idea of a cycling lane in the upper town for the moment, but the government will be making an announcement very soon on the bus service regarding the upper town.
Speaker, just one final question, because obviously the Minister's raised the fact that the awareness as to cycling is important to the government, it's important to the people of our community, important to all members of our community that people get on bikes eventually, when we say it's planned properly, but maybe we have a difference of opinion in relation to that. Now, just from personal experience, and I know that other members may share this, that the cheapest bicycle that you can buy nowadays is between £300 to £400, and the most expensive, of course, are these very... the amazing electric bikes that, you know, go up to about £4,000. So I wonder, the government is trying to encourage the use of cycling in Gibraltar. How is the government going to communicate that, deliver that message to the people insofar as that investment that people should make in bicycles for the future? I think it's an important message because not many people on low-income families were able to afford those types of expensive bicycles to ride on our lanes. And so I'm just asking the government how it is that message will be delivered to the community to persuade them to make that investment into our community.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't agree that the cheapest bicycle would cost £300 and upwards. The Honourable Gentleman says he's got one of the one of the expensive ones, because there are bicycles available for a lot less than £300, which I can point him to if he wishes. And indeed, there are electric bicycles available for a few hundred pounds, and there are a number of kits available that convert a normal bike to an e-bike, which one can get also for a few hundred pounds. But be that as it may, Mr. Speaker, the government will be rolling out different incentives for people, not just to cycle, but also to walk. Indeed, we started to roll out those incentives already and disincentives to use vehicles. And we'll be rolling out other incentives, which will increase some of the incentives we've already offered in respect of hybrid and electric vehicles in the context of our wider plans. And those are usually rolled out at budget time. There isn't going to be a budget in the usual way this month, as there usually would be. We have to look at when there will be a next budget and perhaps even introduce these measures before then. But these are all measures, Mr. Speaker, which are part of ensuring that we do what future generations need us to do. These are difficult decisions that have to be made to change behavior. And, Mr. Speaker, I hope that we will all be as one when it comes to ensuring that we look after the little bit of the planet that we are responsible for and ensuring that we live up to the commitments that we acquired in this House when we declared a climate emergency, and that we don't go off seeking to jump on bandwagons that call for the disincentives to the use of combustion vehicles to be undone and the like. But, Mr. Speaker, I know that all members on this side of the House are committed. I'll watch this space in relation to members on the other side of the House.
Speaker, I don't think many people would disagree that we should not create a cycling-friendlier, greener Gibraltar, of course, and I think it's in the interest of every one of our community to create that and develop that vision. Of course, what the difference between the government and the opposition is how the government goes about doing that and the planning that they deploy in order to achieve that objective, and that's where the political debate is between the government and, of course, the opposition on that question. But would the Chief Minister or the Minister for Transport be prepared to give an insight as to those types of incentives so that normal working families can access or indeed be encouraged to buy bicycles that, you know, Chief Minister refers to a few hundred, but, you know, When the pandemic hit and my bike was stored away from Gibraltar, we had to buy a new bike, one for my son, and it cost, you know, quite a few hundred pounds. And I think it's important to realise that not everyone can make that expense to have that transition to cycling. And therefore, if the Chief Minister could give an insight as to what types of incentives that the government will be looking at in that regard, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the thing that is foremost in the mind of the government are ordinary working families, because they're the people that we represent. The Honourable Gentleman needs to know who it is that he's dealing with. My prized possession when I was a child was my bicycle. It was the biggest thing my parents were able to afford to buy me. It was the thing that gave me the most joy. That may be true of many people sitting around this House today. And, Mr. Speaker, just because some of us have done well in life doesn't mean we forget where we come from, even though others might like to pretend that that is the case. But look, Mr. Speaker, the price of bicycles that the Honourable Gentleman is referring to is not one that I recognise. I mean, is the Honourable Gentleman saying that ordinary working people cannot buy a bicycle for themselves or their children? Because I come from an ordinary working class family and my parents were able to buy a bicycle for me. And I know many ordinary working class people, and they buy bicycles for themselves and for their children. So I don't recognise, Mr. Speaker, the thing that the Honourable Gentleman is saying. Of course, it is possible to buy a carbon fibre bike, which is not electric, which will cost many thousands of pounds. It is possible to buy a newfangled bicycle, which is not carbon fibre, and which will cost many hundreds of pounds. And it is possible to buy a bike which costs 100 plus £200. I can send him the links if he likes, Mr. Speaker. But the issue that he's asking about, he prefaces by saying that the only difference between us is how we go about planning things. Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't accept that. I don't accept that. Because I've seen members of the opposition, those who are in the habit of being seen as professional protesters, protesting behind those who argue for free parking at Midtown. Well, Mr. Speaker, look, that's all very well. And I know, Mr. Speaker, that one particular member of the opposition has expressed quite publicly to the television cameras that the reason that he's against all this, forgetting the climate emergency, forgetting the need to green Gibraltar, is because it costs him a few hundred quid to park his very large engined car in the centre of our city, and it's affecting his working class pocket. Well, Mr. Speaker, the fact is that this is about changing behaviour. We think that we're planning this in the right way. We think we're doing it in the right way. We think we have a mandate to do it. We think this is not just in the interest of today's common working families. We think this is in the interest of common working families today, tomorrow, and in the future. We think it's in the interest of the future generations of Gibraltarians who've demonstrated with greater passion, vigour and vehemence to Number 6 Convent Place to ask us to do something about pollution and climate change, and they, Mr. Speaker, and the future, and we're planning for them.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Chief Minister hurled me into the nostalgia when he spoke about his prized possession of his bicycle. He hurled me into the nostalgia of my red chopper bicycle and the 1970s as we, with a bunch of friends, cycled around Gibraltar in on our choppers. So yes, I mean, I share that. I mean, I also think that we must share the view that we also all represent ordinary working families, and indeed those more affluent members of our community as well. Can I just ask if, as part of the scheme that the Honourable Minister was setting out earlier, there are plans to return that set of rental bicycles that disappeared at the time of COVID, because, of course, there were issues about the perhaps the cleansing of those bicycles at the time of COVID. Is it part of the plan, as part of all this, to promote cycling, that there will be a set of bicycles for rental for people who want to use it, members of our community, or indeed tourists that may come in who want to cycle around Gibraltar?
Mr. Speaker, there you are. He and I have another thing in common. I, too, owned a red chopper. The only chagrin that used to bring to my mind was that the red chopper featured the words chopper in yellow, making it red and yellow, which to those of us who have spent our lives fighting against osmosis was immediately an issue of concern, all of which was allayed when my parents decided that I was too long for the chopper and I got a grifter, which was blue. And with a big Union Jack on the front of the Liverbird for Rally the Producer. So, Mr. Speaker, look, it is absolutely, in the view of the government, essential that we should have the ability for people to rent bicycles in our city in order to aid mobility. We, for reasons that have been documented, believed that the plan that we inherited was not a good one. We implemented a different plan. That plan has had to be suspended for the reasons that the Honourable Gentleman knows. Given the advice that we have at the moment, it's not possible to say that those bikes will be back in September or that they'll be back in the spring. But we certainly hope that the bike rental scheme, which aids mobility by providing bikes in different areas of our city, will soon be available. And he can rest assured that however much the chopper lives in our collective memory and brings a smile to each of us as we remember those heady days of Gibraltar with less traffic in the 1970s, the bikes we bring to Gibraltar will not be red and yellow.
Next question.
Question number 409, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, further to question 274 of 2020, can the government update the House on whether it will apply parking charges at Devil's Tower Road, Laguna, Galpe, Arengos and the Old Queensway Club car parks?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, Devil's Tower Road has a total of 953 spaces, out of which only 180 do not charge a fee and are available for North District permit holders. Laguna Car Park does not charge a fee and is available for North District permit holders. Calpe, Arengos and Old Queensway Club car parks already charge a rental monthly fee.
Mr. Speaker, I'm slightly confused by the answer, because on the last occasion I asked the Minister exactly the same question, and he had not formed a view at that stage as to whether charges would be imposed, parking charges in respect of those particular areas. So I'd lost to understand the answer, because it appeared at the time that the government hadn't formed a view as to that. So it is now the case that the government... If the Minister could clarify, that would be helpful.
Mr. Speaker, if I remember correctly, the member opposite last time asked me whether there was going to be an increase in these car parks. And what I'm telling you is that nothing has changed. We charge what we charge, but nothing has changed to what you asked me last time.
I'm grateful for the clarification and the response, and there is, of course, just asking supplementary, no intention to make any further changes in line with the government's current policy in relation to other parking areas.
I remember, Mr. Speaker, that last time he asked me this question, I said that we were looking into it and that there were repairs involved and that we were going through that.
So... when signs appeared at the top of the Laguna car park, which said the top floor of this car park will solely be used for private and business rentals as from 8 a.m. on Thursday the 11th of June 2020, that does not constitute a change of policy at all?
No, Mr. Speaker, it doesn't, because those private rentals include the rentals that we make available to residents of the North District in the context of that car park changing to what it was originally intended to be, which is a park and ride for visitors to Gibraltar.
I mean, I'm not sure I understood that answer, because there were signs that were erected in early June which indicated to people that it could only be used for business or private rentals as from a certain date. The Honourable Minister has answered to my colleague that there has been no changes. Now, how does that reconcile with the answer the Honourable Chief Minister has just given, that as from a certain date in June, when signs were erected, the public were told that it was only reserved for private or business rentals? I don't understand.
Well, because he doesn't seem to want to understand that members of the North District who hold a permit, who park there, are not members of the public for the purposes of that car park. For that car park, you will be a member of the public if you come to it without a North District permit or a business parking permit for that area. When that car park becomes a public car park for all those who wish to park there instead of coming into Gibraltar.
So why was there a need to erect these signs then?
Because the car park is changing. It is going from a car park that has been used only for those from the North District for a large number of vehicles from a business entity that has needed storage for its car, for its vehicles in different areas, and only the lower floor for public car parking, to the whole of the area becoming available to public parking, except for those areas which are reserved to those North District parking permit holders and other business permit holders. So you need to change the signage in the car park for that reason. I would have thought that's easy to understand.
So North District permit holders are deemed to fall within the concept of private rentals? Is that what the Chief Minister is indicating?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. That is the position that has been the case for some time, that when you are in an estate and you have a parking permit, you have a right either to a parking space or to a parking area. And that is the area reserved for those who hold the permits.
Next question.
Question number 410, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government state how it intends to resolve the issue of residence parking at both worlds, Media Luna?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the government is not aware of what the Honourable Member is referring to when he says resolve the issue of residence parking.
Mr. Speaker, I've been approached by a number of residents at both worlds, particularly those of an elderly disposition and young families, who find it very difficult to park their vehicles at both worlds. It's particularly acute, of course, during the summer periods. And I was wondering what long-term plan the government has for those 150 residents who clearly have cars, no doubt, to park those vehicles within a reasonable distance of their homes, and whether there is any intention of the government to make provision for parking in that specific area and perhaps amplify that to avoid problems encountered by residents vis-a-vis beachgoers, because clearly there are issues regarding that.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite says that he's had a number of complaints. I must say that my office has not had a number of complaints. There's one specific person who's brought this to my attention, and we've helped that person out in trying to... We've been to see her and the area and to see how we can help out. Insofar as parking is concerned in the area, Black Strap Cove area, which is known as the Media Luna, that is reserved specifically for people who live in both worlds. People can actually park, people who live in both worlds can also park in the fifth floor of the Devil's Tower Road car park, which is for North District permit holders. That includes the free parking. That includes both worlds. During the beach season, they can actually park outside both worlds because that converts into a one-way during the summer season. So they can park on the wall right outside their premises. So I think we've done enough for parking in that area. But I mean, I understand that maybe there aren't 180 odd spaces that he mentioned specifically for each and every resident of both worlds.
Mr. Speaker, again, this is a question of planning and provision, and although the government wished to make Gibraltar a greener place, and there the reality on the ground, of course, is there are 150 residents. Many of them will have cars, hopefully just one vehicle, and for the minister to suggest, of course, that these people should park in DTC Devil's Tower Road. And walk all the way. Many of an elderly disposition walk all the way to both worlds. I'm not too sure how the government can rationalise that proposition to the residents of Sandy Bay in both worlds. I think it's important that some provision be made, or at least a long-term strategy to resolve the issue. I think it's beyond one person who may well have been a representative of the residents there. But can the government not at least give assurances to residents at both worlds? And in fact, the general population who enjoy the beach at Sandy Bay, that there will be a long-term strategy to avoid issues of traffic and congestion, and indeed the inherent parking problems in that area, given the stretch of road. It would be wonderful if the minister could at least give a sensible answer to the question I put forward in relation to the parking provision of the area.
Mr. Speaker, there is also the Catlin Bay Reclamation car park, which can be used when the beach season is not there. So that's another area where people in both worlds can park in. And insofar as people using the beaches, we've just introduced six new buses and a new bus route. So every 10 minutes, there is a bus that goes to both worlds. So we're providing alternate forms of transport. So it's not only a question of not using your car, but you can use the bus now. A special bus route, if you include the two other services on that route, you've got eight routes in an hour. I think that's very good going.
Question?
Question number 411, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government confirm what plans the government have for further rollout of pay and display beyond the recently announced Coaling Island pay and display?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the government is continuously reviewing the parking situation and will assign areas as pay and display to support residents of areas blighted by the parking of derelict or abandoned vehicles and complement a green Gibraltar and a child-friendly city.
So at this present moment in time, although the government's constantly reviewing the position, there is no intention to allocate certain areas of pay display. The government doesn't have anything on the radar, as I'm asking the question.
We are constantly reviewing the situation.
Question number 412, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Speaker, can the government explain the rationale for permitting foreign registered vehicles belonging to essential workers paying parking for free in pay and display areas until the 1st of August 2020 in the area in front of St. Bernard's Hospital?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the rationale is very simple. The government has taken a view, as per our press release of June 2020, to extend the concession of free parking for GHA staff in the pay and display area at Harbour Views Road opposite the entrance to St. Bernard's to the 1st August 2020 to coincide with Rock Unlocked. The provision of this concession is for GHA essential workers that can display on the card the necessary GHA credentials and does not discriminate on nationality or with regards to country of vehicle registration.
Mr. Speaker, the information I have received is that a number of foreign registered vehicles belonging to essential workers continue, of course, to park their cars in those areas that the government have designated free until the 1st of August 2020, in line with its policy to strictly enforce against those cars parked in other areas of Gibraltar and to restart the enforcement process in June 2020 as per their press release. The issue, of course, is that the complaint that I've received is that why should cars now being parked, essential workers effectively, working at health service, continue to have this made available to them? And that's why I wanted to understand the rationale regarding that, because it purely can't be simply COVID-related, given that the Chief Minister has recently stated that we're well on our way to a full unlock rock, thank goodness. I'm just trying to understand the rationale for not enforcing traffic laws, normal traffic laws.
Well, Mr. Speaker, because we are on the way to Rock Unlocked. He said it himself. And there is a confluence of the decision to enforce and the end of the period of de-escalation, which is the 1st of August. I would have thought, Mr. Speaker, he would have wanted to get up in this House to align himself with the government in having made available this facility for those of our essential workers, those of our health workers, who have done such a magnificent job in this period of the pandemic, and who would need, because of the restrictions there have been until very recently, etc., and because the GHA is not yet back to normal, to have this facility for this period. But I'm surprised that he hasn't aligned himself with us, Mr. Speaker. We are perfectly relaxed about the policy decision that we have taken. We think it is the right policy decision. We think it focuses a benefit in the hands of those who need it in this period. And we will not hesitate, Mr. Speaker, to once again make a similar decision if we once again have to ramp up the response of the GHA, and if we find ourselves again in a situation where public transport is limited in some way or regard. So, Mr. Speaker, the government stands by its decision. We think it's the right decision. It's the right decision for the right people. And I'm surprised the Honourable Gentleman doesn't, in fact, want to get up and associate himself with the decision that the government has made.
Mr. Speaker, it's not as though we don't want to associate. Of course, we commend the marvellous work done by our healthcare workers in the challenge that COVID has presented, and we don't resile from that position, of course. But, Mr. Speaker, insofar as focusing the benefits as he describes in relation to parking, we don't see any reason why now that full enforcement of our laws in relation to parking should not take place. We don't understand why that there appears on the ground to be a discrimination, that foreign registered vehicles are coming into Gibraltar, parking in specific bays, free of charge until the 1st of August, when ultimately Gibraltar has been unlocked in respect of parking, save for these specific places where GHA workers with foreign registered vehicles continue to park for free. It's about fairness, not about focusing benefits, Mr. Speaker. It's about focusing entirely on fairness.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is not about foreign registered vehicles. This is about vehicles with GHA permits, regardless of the place of registration. I have never seen, though, Mr. Speaker, a clearer example, for which I thank the Honourable Gentleman, of wanting to run with the hares and hunt with the hounds. No. But it is so transparent that even the shallowest political analyst who might be persuaded that somehow this xenophobic approach that the Honourable Gentleman is taking to try and stoke the fire of dissent on the basis that we are enforcing against Gibraltarian registered vehicles whilst not enforcing against foreign registered vehicles, never mind the fact that we're not doing any of that, we're just permitting those with a GHA permit to park, that somehow that might enable him to curry favour with some who might decide that the terrible government that has permitted our fantastic GHA workers, who they bang the table for, to park without enforcement, might somehow therefore need to be removed in favour of the magnificent opposition that he and his colleagues represent. Mr. Speaker, look, you know, the success of populist movements around the world is a matter of regret to those of us who actually represent a real ideology. But if in Gibraltar, and I am conscious, Mr. Speaker, that the Honourable Mr. Fitem has already got up in this House less than 4 months ago and declared that he is not a socialist. Words which I will remind him of repeatedly doesn't mean that just because he isn't, the rest of us are not. But, Mr. Speaker, the fact that the Honourable Gentleman tries to say that we should support the work done by our healthcare workers, but then tries to say that we must enforce parking restrictions against them even before we've got to rock and locked. Mr. Speaker, look, I am sure that there are people shallow enough to swallow it. I have great confidence in the perception, wit, and understanding of the Gibraltarian electorate enough to see straight through it.
Question. Every single member of our community is participating in trying to get back to normal in our community, from not only GHA workers, but every worker in our community is trying their best to recover our position and to recover from the public health emergency, Mr. Speaker. So this inconsistent approach insofar as parking is, quite frankly, nonsensical, and I don't understand the rationale, Mr. Speaker. We are getting back to normal, thankfully. And the rock will be unlocked, as the Chief Minister has alluded to. And there is no reason, Mr. Speaker, in our view, to retain or focus these benefits, which would seem on the face of it to be unfair, Mr. Speaker. Does the Chief Minister agree with that analysis? Probably not.
Mr. Speaker, I obviously don't, for all the reasons I've already given. That just seems like it doesn't seem like a question, which is fair in the context of a supplementary. It just seems like an opportunity to respond and try and have another bite at the cherry. But given that he wants to ask me the question again, I will give him the answer again. Because we have not yet reached lock and lock, which is on the 1st of August, because the GHA is still not in the state of normality, which it will not achieve until the 1st of August, although it will still have to deal with all of the backlog then, the government made the decision to allow members of our essential services who work in the GHA, whatever their nationality, with whatever their registration, to have a permit which gave them the benefit of parking in that particular area until rock and locked. That day, Mr. Speaker, is now, I think, from a basic calculation, in the region of 16 days away. It is remarkable, Mr. Speaker, that given what we have been through and what we are going through, we're spending time in this House having an argument about GHA workers being able to park for another 16 days without having the full force of parking laws enforced against them. Mr. Speaker, the government is perfectly relaxed, comfortable, and convinced that what we are doing is right, it is proper, and it is designed to benefit those who have worked the hardest in the context of the success that Gibraltar has displayed in respect of this pandemic, and who are still dealing with the consequences and are now preparing for when it may come again. And Mr. Speaker, frankly, I have given my views as to what the Honourable Gentleman is trying to do. I do not think there is a political observer shallow enough to swallow it.
I think we need to move on now, please. Next question.
Question number 413, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the government confirm whether or not it intends to charge a fee for those persons issued with low carbon pass?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the government has to this point issued no low carbon pass.
He hasn't issued, there is no charge to the issue of the permit, or there is no permit.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite asks the question, can the government confirm whether or not it intends to charge a fee for those persons issued with a low carbon pass? And my answer is, the government has to this point issued no carbon pass, no low carbon pass.
I'm grateful for the answer, but I've been shown a low carbon pass issued by the government. So unless it's completely fabricated, that was shown to me, then I'm not too sure what it is. Is it described as something else, Mr. Speaker? But low emissions pass?
Well, Mr. Speaker, he needs to make up his mind. Either he's been shown a low carbon pass or he's shown something else. And if he's been shown a low carbon pass, like he says he has been, maybe he could send it to me so I can look into it for him.
Speaker, I'm trying to be helpful, and if the Minister would kindly just explain whether, insofar as the access, and we all know which road we're talking about, of course, and the issuing of these particular passes, he's pointing out that I may have used the wrong word, low-carbon pass, and if so, then I apologise for that. But, Mr. Speaker, I was shown this a while ago, and if it is a low-emission pass, I would be grateful if the Minister could clarify whether, indeed, the government issues these passes and whether, indeed, it intends to charge for those types of passes.
Mr. Speaker, what the government has issued is a low-emission zone permit, and the government is not charging for it.
Question number 414, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
I will refrain from commenting on that aside by the Chief Minister. Can the government set out any results from the traffic and pollution monitoring in respect to the Linewall pilot scheme?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 415 to 417.
Question number 415, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
When will the traffic volume monitoring survey be published?
Question number 416, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government state traffic volumes from the Upper Town via Governor Street Town Range into town?
Question number 417, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government state how it monitors the restriction of traffic on Linewall Road?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the pollution is being monitored by a live AQ mesh pod placed by the Environmental Agency on the Linewall Road on the 22nd of May. Because of technical difficulties, the data did not start to get captured until the 10th of June. The data captured is live and can be viewed on the Gibraltar Air Quality website, with monthly summaries being reviewed by the development departments. Traffic counters were placed at a number of locations on Linewall Road, along with Queensway and Smith Dorian Avenue on the 8th of June. The first batch of data will be collected after a full month. As previously mentioned, these traffic counters are placed in the various areas to capture the changes in traffic patterns. Two of these locations are Lover's Lane and Secretary's Lane. This will monitor the traffic that does not pass directly through the restricted area and turns back at Duke of Kent House. We intend to monitor the scheme by reviewing the data and comparing Tuesday to Friday when there are no restrictions and Saturday to Monday when controls are put in place.
Speaker, insofar as question 414 is concerned, can the government clarify what technical difficulties were experienced in relation to the AQ mesh monitors between the 22nd of May and the 10th of June?
Mr. Speaker, unfortunately, I can't give him information on that, but if he writes to me on sometime after the session, I can and get back to him with more information.
The minister alluded to data that could be collected over a period of a month. So I take it that data has now been collected from the 10th of June until the 10th of July. And I wonder whether the minister had to hand the results of that data that he could provide a helpful answer to the question to the House.
Mr. Speaker, we would need notice for that. I mean, this is data for over a month of cars passing by all different areas of Gibraltar, so you'd have to give notice for that.
Apologies. The reason why I asked this question, of course, is because 414 asks the government to set out any results from traffic pollution monitoring in respect of the Linewall pilot scheme. Now, the government has already said that on the 22nd of May it experienced technical difficulties, which meant that those monitors did not start collecting data as from the 10th of June. And therefore, I don't think it's right that I provide notice of the question. The question is the same as that. It's just I was asking whether the data from the 10th of June, when the government discovered that there was a technical difficulty in the collation of that information, to the 10th of July now, and whether the government had already had the data in order to analyse it to ascertain the traffic and pollution monitoring along Linewall Road in the pilot scheme. I would suggest, of course, that given the government are running with this pilot scheme in order to demonstrate, presumably to demonstrate to the community that things are better now under the pilot scheme, that the government would have at least an element of data to reinforce its argument or at least demonstrate that its pilot scheme is working.
Mr. Speaker, this question was asked about 3 weeks ago, and the preparation of this question was perhaps 10 days ago, so the month hasn't had an elapse yet. And anyway, this data is an internal technical document, and at the moment I don't feel that the government needs to publish this.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure I understand why the Honourable Member says he's got difficulty in explaining what the technical issue is behind the answer he gave, that there was a problem between the 22nd of May and 10th of June, or indeed why he requires notice for that question, given that it was in his original answer. If his original answer points to the technical difficulty, presumably he asked his officials who prepared that answer what the problem was.
Mr. Speaker, the technical difficulty, if I may assist, the technical difficulty could be various. It could be a problem with the recording of the data, accessing the data. It could be various. I don't think the Honourable Minister needed to know exactly what that technical difficulty was. He's explained there was a technical difficulty. If the Honourable Member wants to know the detail, then clearly that can be answered, but it is not information that he or I would necessarily have here and now.
I'm sure the Honourable Minister is grateful for the hurling of life jackets into the sea, but he's speculating as to, with all due respect, in his answer, he's speculating it could be this, it could be that. I haven't finished my question yet. What I'm saying is, it was in the Minister's original answer that there were difficulties, and one would have thought that he would have probed his officials. Presumably, he did not prepare the answer, but his officials did. He would have probed his officials as to what the problem was, because it is an obvious supplementary. But if he hasn't got that information, so be it. Can I ask the minister? I assume that the purpose of the pollution monitoring mechanisms is to understand the pollution effects, one way or the other, of the Linewall Road scheme. Can the minister confirm that that is the purpose of those measures? And if so, can he perhaps indicate to us what pollution monitoring mechanisms there are on Queensway?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman needs to understand what it was that the minister said before saying that he should have quizzed his officials. The Honourable Minister said in the context of his first answer, pollution is being monitored by a live AQS pod placed by the Environmental Agency on Linewall Road. Because of technical difficulties, the data did not start to get captured until the 10th of June. His officials,
referring to the Minister for Transport and not officials of the Environmental Agency or the Environmental Department. They are the officials of the Minister for the Environment, who therefore got up not to hurl life jackets, but to assist the House, because it was his officials that would have been relevant, and indeed the officers of an independent entity set up who would have had the technical difficulties at their fingertips. But this is all about the quality of air in different places. It is about also ensuring that pollution is dealt with appropriately. Mr. Speaker, if the Honourable Gentleman wants to know what mechanisms are in place for Queensway, which is not the subject matter of these questions, I invite him to put a question for the next meeting.
Mr. Speaker, I think we are... It is within the scope, I have to say. First of all, the Honourable Chief Minister's answer has just simply confirmed that if the original drafting did not come from the Minister for Transport's department and came from a colleague minister who then got up to clarify, his colleague minister doesn't know either what the technical difficulties behind it, even though it was officials answerable to him that prepared the answer. And that's fine. But the question that my honourable colleague puts is directed to traffic and pollution monitoring in respect of the line wall pilot scheme. The scheme as a whole does several things. One of the things it does is it pushes traffic to Queensway because you cannot access line wall on certain days of the week. It would have been an obvious step to take to monitor pollution in Queensway as part of the effect on pollution monitoring, which is the direct consequence of the line wall pilot scheme. So as the government always says, it's so interested in green Gibraltar, why not monitor the pollution of that part of Gibraltar that is 75 meters away from Line Wall Road, which is a direct consequence of the Line Wall Road pilot scheme?
There is a problem, Mr. Speaker, when people believe their own publicity. The government is monitoring the air quality on Queensway. The Honourable Gentleman did not ask us whether we are monitoring it. The Honourable Gentleman, in an exercise of moving the goalposts, asks us where are the air monitoring stations on Queensway. And then when I tell him if he wants to know where they are, he should ask us at the next house, he then says, why are you not monitoring the air quality at Queensway? Two completely different things. Now, Mr. Speaker, look, this is question time in a parliament. This is not cross-examination in an attempt to catch out a witness, and the Honourable Gentleman needs to realise that. You see, it is also wrong to assume that pollution is being displaced from Linewall Road to Queensway, although I know that some with a shallower understanding of these issues have suggested that. In fact, there is very likely much less pollution because people are not using their cars, which would actually be a success in the context of trying to bring about less use of the internal combustion engine, the climate change emergency, and Green Gibraltar. Whilst if what we do is displace cars to Queensway, that would not be success. And yet, as honourable members have pointed out, there are areas for pay parking, both in the Midtown car park and outside the Midtown car park, which are not being used, despite those areas having been full before on days when Linewall was open and when Linewall was closed. So the strategy, Mr. Speaker, has been not to displace traffic to Queensway. The strategy has been to ask people not to get into their vehicles. So we are monitoring Queensway 75 metres away, which was not the question that he asked in his early supplementary. If he wants to know where those air quality monitoring stations, I put it to him, that is not in the nature of a supplementary, because otherwise, Mr. Speaker, when you come here on a question on air quality monitoring on one road, you need to come with a supplementary information in respect of air quality monitoring in respect of every other road in Gibraltar, which would be, in my view, nonsensical. And second, Mr. Speaker, we are convinced that what we are doing is not displacing pollution, but reducing pollution. And we will soon have the evidence to show that. And as the Honourable the Minister for the Environment, I think, has said on a number of occasions in this House, this data is live. Honourable members can log on to see the AirQS monitoring data. So, Mr. Speaker, you know, if they're genuinely interested in trying to understand pollution, not its displacement, but its the process towards its eradication, then I urge them to jump off the bandwagon they seem to be wanting to jump on and jump on our Green Gibraltar agenda. It's a Green Gibraltar agenda, Mr. Speaker, that I commend to everyone in this House and to everyone who is watching. It's the agenda that deals with the climate change emergency. Mr. Speaker, this is not something to laugh about. This is not something to joke about. This is not even just our future. This is the future of our children and our children's children. And unless we start to take it seriously, and unless we start to look at the faces of those who protested in front of Number 6 Common Place, who are the young generation, the future generation, and take them seriously, Mr. Speaker, we will fail to learn from history, and we will fail to plan for the future.
Mr. Speaker, just in relation to the answer to 416, I apologise if I've missed the answer to that question, but I don't believe that I had the traffic volumes from Upper Town via Governor Street Town Range. And, is it perhaps more in the form of a schedule to the question?
Mr. Speaker, it seems that this information has not been provided. The Upper Town, which is question 416, did you say? Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker, we don't have the data on that yet. So I'll look into it and get it to you. So I'll get it to the member opposite in the next few days.
I'm grateful. That should assist. And, of course, if we want to formally convert that into a written response, I'm not sure that's within the rules now, given the fact that there is an answer on the record. But either way, if we can get it in 2 days, I'd be grateful.
Question number 418, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Can the government confirm the total cost to the taxpayer of the STTP?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the total payment to Matt MacDonald for the preparation of the STTPP was £475,758. Mr. Speaker, 475,758.
I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the answer. Has there been any further costs incurred in relation to that report? Has the government, it links to this, commissioned the company or the individual concerned to conduct further analysis of the STTP in light of the government's commitment to a Greener Gibraltar and the transport policies that it is now announcing? I wonder whether the government have engaged them further on this subject and whether costs have been incurred as a result of that process.
Mr. Speaker, this is the total cost up to today.
Question number 419, the Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise when it intends to revise the business licensing regime?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar is already in the final stages of the drafting process of the new Fair Trading Act 2020, which will establish the new business licensing regime. It is expected that this will be duly presented to Parliament within the next quarter having been delayed due to COVID-19. In the meantime, the Office of Fair Trading has already been working to implement systems and procedures to allow for the administration of the new regime for some time. This includes the upgrading of its website to allow service users to engage electronically with the office and the implementation of a bespoke new database.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Minister for his answer. He will appreciate that this bill has been at an advanced stage for some time now, and that as far as I'm aware, or at least I begin to understand, that the Chamber and the Federation certainly, perhaps towards the end of last year, had already come to some kind of working document with the government or the minister, with which they were happy. Given the COVID emergency and the need to get our businesses in a fitter state post-COVID, would you not agree with me that the time to implement these measures is now and as soon as possible, and unless there's any particular reason for delay, they should publish the bill immediately?
Mr. Speaker, I never thought I would say that I agree with the member opposite. But yes, I agree. I mean, we should have this sooner. I've said quarter three, but I think we'll have it probably at the beginning. The Chamber and the Federation of Small Businesses are on board. They're aware of the few bits and pieces that we needed to tidy up, but there's no big story behind it, and we'll be doing it extremely soon.
Question number 420, the Honourable D.A. Feetham.
Mr. Speaker, by question, written question 73 of 2020, I asked how many requests for information had been received by our authorities from the Spanish government or emanations of that state in relation to individuals or entities resident or domiciled in Gibraltar in respect of A, tax, and B, road traffic offences committed in Spain. The Minister answered A, but not B. Can we now have an answer to B?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested by the Honourable Member is set out in the schedule. I will now hand over.
Mr. Speaker, if it meets with your approval, we can continue with the rest of the questions whilst I analyse the schedule and perhaps return back to it for supplementary.
Question number 421, the Honourable DJ Bosino.
Further to his reply to question 281 of 2020, can the Minister for Tourism advise this House whether the government has made any progress in formulating plans to support the hotel industry, and if so, detail what these are in the immediate to short term?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the government will be announcing plans on how to help businesses in the third quarter, but I'd like to add that the government has announced plans, which is the BEAT 2.0 measure, so this will cover the hotels too. Apart from that, the government is looking at a possible hotel assistance scheme.
Is there any reason, can I ask the Minister for, if I can put it in these terms, not being critical of him or anything of the sort, is simply why the apparent delay? Because, I mean, this was mentioned, the potential package for the hotel industry, I think, was mentioned by the Honourable Chief Minister back in March when he announced the initial measures. And the way he pronounced himself in relation to this issue, he gave the impression, Mr. Speaker, that it was going to be more imminent. But now we are seeing that it won't be available until the third quarter. Is there any reason? Is it as a result of consultation which the Honourable Member has been undergoing with the hotel industry?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman I think has got the wrong end of the stick. I'm not implying a criticism or in any way suggesting anything which might be imputed in the negative in that respect. When the Honourable Gentleman, the Honourable the Minister has told him that these things will be available in the third quarter, the Honourable Gentleman needs to know that we are in the third quarter. So in other words, now, but for the third quarter. And so we have been in very close negotiations with the hotel industry. There, it's not like the retail industry where you might have many hundreds of people. This is a finite number. It's a handful, almost. We're in very close contact with them. There are different hotels with different needs. What we need to do is we need to design a scheme that works and that works in a way that will not fall foul of state aid rules or which falls within the existing notified schemes. In fact, I think I've recently texted the Honourable, the Leader of the Opposition and the Minister and the Shadow Minister for Public Finance to say, trying to fix a date to discuss with them also the measures, because we've tried to have discussions about these measures before they're announced with Honourable Members, whether we can agree them or not, but at least to have their views. And this is a very current discussion. And, of course, the discussion is on the basis of what is happening on the ground. How are the hotels seeing the return of guests now that the air bridges are in place, now that there's a slight loosening of arrivals in Gibraltar? Is July going to be as bad as June was? Will August be better than July, or will it all be a wasted season? All of that, Mr. Speaker, is something that we're discussing very closely with hotels. They're being very open with the data that they're providing to us, obviously in confidence, and obviously on a siloed basis. What one hotel tells you, you can't share with the other hotel, but you then have to make a decision to propose something which the taxpayer can back. What the Honourable Gentleman is also being told by the Minister is that BEAT 2.0 applies to hotels also. And so there is an element of support already built into what the Honourable Gentleman has been told, which is the new incarnation of the BEAT payment, which go to the business. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, there's already a lot being done which benefits hotels. And if necessary, more will be done, and that's what our discussions may lead us to. But the fact that we haven't reached a conclusion yet doesn't mean that we're not very closely working with this particular sectoral interest group.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the Honourable Member for that reply. In relation to the imminence of the package which was being devised by the, as announced by the Honourable Chief Minister back in March, for specifically for the hotels, I've got the section here from Hansard where he talks about to continue to fund costs, and the main concern there was to ensure that the hotels were not shut. And I'm sure he will join me and the members on this side of the House for congratulating the hotel industry in Gibraltar being remaining faithful to Gibraltar. They have been here for many, many years, and they have, you know, through thick and thin, through close frontier period. You know, my father was a general manager of the Rock Hotel, as many people know. It was a very tough period, and they've proven their mettle once again. But in relation to the timing of it, if I can just quote this to him, when he says, "We will finalise a package for our hotels, specifically for our hotels, to remain open in the coming hours." So that, this is why I insist whether there is any reason for that delay. And then I've got another supplementary, but perhaps he could address that point first.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very pleased that the Honourable Gentleman has joined us on this side of the House in supporting the hotel industry in Gibraltar. Before I carry on, I will make the small nuance of just reminding the House of the job that his father did at the time that he was the general manager of the Rock Hotel, when that hotel was a go-to place, which we all enjoyed in our youth, and which he ran with Alain and Panache, which we all remember with great joy. But I must also tell him, Mr. Speaker, that the Rock Hotel is not the only hotel in town, and all of the hotels have done remarkably well. The Caletta Hotel was opened not at the turn of the century, of the last century, as the Rock Hotel was. The Caletta Hotel was opened, you know, in the years running up towards the closure of the frontier, and the family that run the hotel stuck with Gibraltar and stuck with the hotel through the thin years as well as the good years. And the Sunborn Hotel, Mr. Speaker, was one that they universally reviled when it first arrived, and I'm pleased to see them now included in their praise, Mr. Speaker. And the Elliott Hotel is an important offer to the corporate businesses that have their headquarters in Gibraltar, and the Holiday Inn Express is an important part of what it is that Gibraltar offers today to a different segment of the market. And the Bristol Hotel in the centre of our city is also an important part of what we do. And, Mr. Speaker, you know, it is likely that we may want to see more hotels in Gibraltar in the future. All of them are committed to Gibraltar, and Gibraltar is committed to the employment that they create and the wealth that they create to the businesses that they bring. And what we did within the hours of my statement, Mr. Speaker, was continue those discussions and to try and agree with the hotel industry what it was that we were going to do. And I don't want to socialise that with the community until I've had the meeting that I referred the Honourable Gentleman to, which is the meeting with his current leader and the Shadow Minister for Public Finance, so that we can socialise it with them, which is what we've tried to do in the past. So he will permit me to deal with the leadership of his party in this respect before I make a public announcement about that, because that's how we've dealt with this in the past in respect of the BEAT measures.
Speaker, just to clarify, is it correct that the Sunborn has in fact shut? That's what I heard. So maybe it shouldn't be attributed with so much praise. But Mr. Speaker, this question was asked on the back of the reply to the question I asked at the last meeting, and in that answer, the Honourable Member said that I had been in constant contact with the hotels during the COVID emergency, providing them reassurance and seeking their feedback on how they felt they could be assisted by HM Government of Gibraltar. Can he give this House any detail at this stage, even if by way of high-level sort of analysis or report, what type of feedback he has been receiving from the hotels as to what type of assistance they require?
Well, no, Mr. Speaker, not without actually socialising the package, which I'm not ready yet to do. I mean, as to his comments in relation to the Sunborn, as far as I understood, the Sunborn remained available, but with no one booking, like the other hotels, they were waiting to take guests if they needed to. And we were in touch with them as we were with all the others. But, Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to see that they are leopards that do not change their spots, and they still take the same attitude to the Sunborn that they have consistently taken.
Speaker, may I return back to the question on traffic? Mr. Speaker, I'm taken aback by the sheer numbers of requests from the Spanish state in relation to traffic offences that are committed in Spain by residents of Gibraltar, and requests that have been made of the Gibraltar authorities, which, if I may read it out so that members of the public can follow the debate. 2017, 338. 2018, 4,447. 2019, 3,818 requests. And 2020-24, because, of course, we've had COVID. In relation to these requests, have these requests been requests made by the Spanish state or emanations of the Spanish state directly to Gibraltar authorities?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman uses the word directly, and given that they, whilst they were in government, agreed the concept of the post box, I am unable, without notice of the question, to tell him whether the requests came or were handled electronically through an information system, or whether they came through the post box that they agreed. So I cannot answer whether that is information that was sought directly or not for that reason. I need notice of that question.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's the obvious supplementary, but of course I can't take it further if they don't have the information. But perhaps he can assist me with this supplementary. Does the Honourable, the Chief Minister or the Minister for Transport, think it's fair that there have been all these requests from the Spanish state to Gibraltar authorities, either via postbox or directly, which have been complied with by the Spanish authorities, by the Gibraltar authorities, but there have been no requests from Gibraltar authorities to the Spanish state or emanations of the Spanish state in relation to offences committed by Spanish drivers in Gibraltar?
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman is wrong to say that his question, his supplementary, is the direct, obvious supplementary to arise, because his question asks for statistics, not for mechanism in respect of which information is sought. If his question were about mechanism, then his supplementary might be obvious and foreseeable. Given that it was not, he is wrong to suggest that it is. Secondly, he now asks a question about fairness. I think the Honourable Gentleman is wrong about that as well, because the reason that he will find that we do not make the requests of Spain that Spain makes of us is because we are far more draconian in our approach. We will impound a vehicle that is involved in an accident, or we will clamp a vehicle that is improperly parked if it is not a locally registered vehicle and not one of those enjoying the benefit of having a GHA pass, as we discussed earlier. And therefore, we have much less need for those requests for information. We don't have instances yet recorded, because we introduced the speed cameras recently, of offences against speed cameras which have required information from the Spanish authorities. Otherwise, we would have had it. So, Mr. Speaker, it's not a question of fairness. It's a question of different enforcement mechanisms in place in different jurisdictions. Now, I know that he is keen to show himself to be the anti-osmosis champion, and he doesn't know what to do in order to try and garner that element of nationalistic support in the way that he sees it. This is not how to do it, Mr. Speaker. This is about compliance with a European Union instrument that requires exchange of information. That same European Union that we all voted to stay within when this were the mechanisms that were in play. So, Mr. Speaker, what he might want to do is he might want to convince the government to take the same approach to road traffic that the Spanish take. In other words, not to clamp and then to seek information from the Spanish as to the number plates and who they belong to and send a fine later. We think that the way we do it, which is the way that successive governments have done it, has a more direct and immediate result for the taxpayer. And we think it's the right approach to take, but it doesn't go to fairness, because some might think that we are being unfair rather than the other way around.
Mr. Speaker, the answer really does not stack up on a number of levels, not least because in answer to written question 73 of 2020, the answer that was provided by the government to me when I asked how many requests have been made from Gibraltar to Spain, the answer came, and I'll quote so that I don't, so that I'm not misrepresenting the position. The number, it said, the number of requests for information received by the income tax. No, this is the one. The RGP understands from Gibraltar Licensing Department that the DVLA UK would not make requests to the Spanish state to seek out information on individuals resident in Spain in respect of traffic offences committed in Gibraltar. Hence, no requests have been made. That's the answer that I was given. That the DVLA in the UK, presumably because it's got to be channeled via the DVLA in Spain, does not make requests on behalf of Gibraltar. Hence, no requests have been made. That's the answer that was given to me when I asked the question last time around. And therefore, that begs the question, this supplementary. Well, what efforts have been made by the Gibraltar government, bearing in mind that it's been sitting with Spain and discussing issues of mutual cooperation and the like, in order to allow for the Gibraltar authorities, in appropriate circumstances, to be able to obtain information from Spanish drivers in Gibraltar that break the law in Gibraltar and are not dealt with in the way that the Honourable the Chief Minister has indicated in answer by clamping, etc., because there must be drivers that are not dealt with in that way, and that the Gibraltar government would, I presume, want to be able to enforce its the criminal law against Spanish drivers in Gibraltar.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I don't recognize that we are in a situation where the information cannot be provided to Gibraltar, but he is right to point us in this direction, and this is an issue that we have taken up on a number of occasions, and that is to undo that which we did not support when we were in opposition, which they did when they were in power, which is the postbox, which was the making sacrosanct the non-recognition of Gibraltar by Spanish authorities, which he sat in the government that agreed and supported, and which we are seeking to undo. Because we don't accept that information should come to Gibraltar from Spain via postbox. We don't accept that Gibraltar should seek information from Spain via postbox. We think it was wrong for the GSD to agree that. We think it is retrograde to do that. In particular, in the digital age, it doesn't work. And, Mr. Speaker, I think he will now take the view that they were wrong to agree it.
Well, Mr. Speaker, let's come back to what I am asking and what the information that I am attempting to obtain from the government. Does he accept that there are going to be Spanish drivers committing offences in Gibraltar that cannot be dealt with in the manner that the Honourable the Chief Minister described a few months ago when he answered a supplementary, when he said, well, we deal with it by way of clamping or on-the-spot fines, that there will be a number of Spanish drivers that will commit offences here, and that there will be a need, if you are serious about essentially enforcing our laws against Spanish drivers, there will be a need of obtaining information about where those people reside so that the Gibraltarian authorities can do in relation to those drivers, Spanish drivers, what the Spanish authorities habitually, in their thousands, are doing in relation to our residents in Gibraltar.
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman needs to understand that there is a hook that has caught him that he will not be able to wriggle off. And that is that the mechanism that he has identified as the problem is the mechanism that they agreed whilst they were in power. In other words, the hurdle that he is now alighting upon is of their making. And so, Mr. Speaker, I do recognise that he will do anything possible to pretend that he can put distance between himself and that which was agreed in the time that his party was in power, and that he can now pretend that this is a problem of our making, not of theirs. Let's be very clear. If the issue he is identifying is an issue which gets caught up, as he says it is, on the basis of the DVLA being used as a postbox, it's a postbox they bought and swallowed hook, line, and sinker.
No, Mr. Speaker, because we may have agreed at the time the postbox arrangements, but in fact this may be completely a completely different situation, in the sense that the DVLA may essentially be saying, well, we don't accept jurisdiction for Gibraltar because Gibraltar is not part of the United Kingdom, or alternatively, it may be that the Gibraltar authorities would in fact not wish to have a situation where the DVLA is accepting jurisdiction for Gibraltar. The postbox arrangements could in fact work outside the DVLA. The DVLA do not have to be involved in the seeking of information from Spanish authorities as to criminal offences that are committed here in Gibraltar. But look, Mr. Speaker, he has been in power now for the last 10 years. And what we have at the moment is a situation where there are requests from Spanish authorities. We don't know, in fact, whether they are requests directly to the Gibraltarian authorities and whether Gibraltarian authorities are answering it directly to the Spanish authorities outside the postbox arrangements. And I will ask another question next time round. But doesn't he feel at least some concern that there are thousands of requests to the Gibraltar authorities about Gibraltarians committing offences, traffic offences in Spain, that are being, that information is being provided by our authorities, but there is not one request, not one, Mr. Speaker, from our authorities to the Spanish authorities in relation to offences committed by Spanish drivers here in Gibraltar. And it's on his watch, not on ours, Mr. Speaker.
Well, Mr. Speaker, despite the rhetoric and the obvious, unassailable passion that he has for this and any other subject that he believes is going to garner him some electoral support, I have to once again point out that, unfortunately, we haven't yet been in power for 10 years. We've been in power for 8.5 years, and somebody who gets that simple math so wrong can be expected to have got a lot of the other steps in the questioning that he sought to deploy wrong also. And each part of the earlier part of his supplementary was assumption. And as the Honourable Gentleman knows, to assume makes an ass of you and me, Mr. Speaker. And therefore, we must not fall into the trap of questions based on assumption, however much passion we want to inject into the way in which we ask them. Now, even in 8.5 years, we have not been able to undo some of the lasting damage in some respects of some areas of policy that honourable members did when they were in government. In some respects, we build on good work that they did. In some respects, we have just not been able to undo damage that they did. The postbox, in my opinion, in the opinion of those of us who are in government today, was one of those elements of lasting damage, which made sacrosanct the Spanish approach to non-recognition of Gibraltar, which could lead to the sort of situation that he is postulating, may, therein the assumption, have arisen. But if it has, Mr. Speaker, he was the most enthusiastic cheerleader, pom-poms and all, of everything done in that respect. And I have to tell him, he's fixed with the honours that he bestowed on the man that did this, who he habitually describes as the greatest Gibraltarian of all time, however uncomfortable that may be, given the alliances he's trying to make for the future.
One final one, please.
Mr. Speaker, what efforts has the government done in order to ensure that it is in a position, either directly or through the postbox arrangements, to be able to prosecute or indeed fine Spanish drivers that commit offences in this jurisdiction that are not dealt with by way of clamping or on the spot fines?
So really, Mr. Speaker, that question cannot, by any stretch of the imagination, arise from the question that we're dealing with. It can arise from the supplementaries to the supplementaries to the supplementary, but it cannot arise from the question that we are dealing with. And that is a question, Mr. Speaker, also for the law enforcement authorities, where we, when asked the question, would be able to obtain the information for him if he wants to put it at the next house. But look, let's be very clear. The government of Gibraltar, which I lead, believes that the laws of Gibraltar should be enforced in Gibraltar in respect of everyone in the same way. And in Gibraltar means every grain of our land, every drop of our water, and every breath of our air. And everyone understands that to be the case.
Well, I'm afraid, Mr. Speaker, that I certainly don't understand that to be the case. And that has been reinforced by the answers that the Honourable the Chief Minister has provided to my supplementaries. Mr. Speaker, this question that I've asked, the last question, arises from the fact that it's the government itself that's made an issue out of the postbox arrangement. Bearing in mind that we don't even know, in fact, whether the Spanish authorities are deploying the postbox arrangements in order to make these thousands of requests in Gibraltar, because they could be made directly to the Gibraltar authorities. I merely point that out, Mr. Speaker, that I've asked this supplementary arising out of information that the fact that it's the government that's made it about this.
Well, Mr. Speaker, and I would merely point out, given that merely pointing out now appears to be something that one can do under the rules of the House, that the Honourable Gentleman is wrong to make the assumption that we do not believe in the fair and equitable enforcement of the laws of Gibraltar in Gibraltar in respect of anyone in Gibraltar, whoever they may be, because by coming to Gibraltar, they subject themselves to our laws in our land, in our sea, and in our air. And the Honourable Gentleman, Mr. Speaker, is trying simply to create some xenophobic support for his position in a way that he knows will garner support from certain sectors of the social media glitterati. So be it, Mr. Speaker. He has tried this tactic from 2011 onwards, and it has led him to take his party to the greatest defeat since 1991. And indeed, no doubt, although it did for his career for a while, he hopes to come back and give it another bash. Well, Mr. Speaker, I suspect he'll get another bashing.
The Honourable Leader of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, can I ask the Honourable Chief Minister, the current leader of the JUSLP, as he's described me, as the current leader. I mean, I heard what he said about the making assumptions is a mistake in some ways, but of course, making assumptions in questions is more understandable than making assumptions in answers, which is less understandable because you're in possession of the facts. So hopefully, the answers that we are given on this side of the House are not assumptions, but they're actually based on facts and not speculation. I mean, I have to say as well that hearing the Honourable Chief Minister, and I know why he says it in this way, and he puts it in this way, but for him to have said that the post-boxing arrangements made sacrosanct the non-recognition of competent authorities, I think is rather to understand the post-boxing arrangements on its head. It did the reverse. What it did was deliver final recognition of the competent authorities, albeit through a conduit, the post-box, a channel, a mere channel of communication, which secured the recognition of Gibraltar authorities? Or has he forgotten that just before the post-boxing arrangements were entered into, we all had that big demonstration to the frontier where we waved our passports because our passports and ID cards were not being recognized. And it was only as a result of the post-boxing arrangements that, in fact, our authorities were recognized, albeit through this channel of communication. What my honourable colleague has asked, which he has sought to deflect with this erection of the post-boxing arrangement as if it were some kind of terrible institution that is the answer to the question, where he is speculating with the same ill that he has pointed out to my honourable colleague, making the assumption that it was the post-boxing arrangement that it seems that is the problem. Seems to me that that doesn't stack up for this very basic reason. Because, as my honourable colleague has pointed out, there have been either 4,500 requests coming in 2018 from Spain, or 3,800 last year coming in from Spain, and none in the other direction. Now, the requests coming in from Spain can only have come in one of two ways. Either they came in directly, in which case they could also go out directly, and the post-boxing arrangement is not an impediment, or they have come in through the post-box, in which case they could also go out through the post-box, and the post-boxing arrangement is not an impediment. So what is the reason that there are no requests in the other direction? Because the post-box is not the impediment, whether they go in directly or indirectly.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as the current leader of this House, and having no expectation of being immortal or eternal, as others who have held this post have pretended to be, it is in my temporal right and obligation to answer questions in this House in the way that enables honourable members to have the data that they require. And the supplementary that the honourable gentleman asked was based as I indicated, on assumption, and I therefore told him that I could only answer on the basis of assumption. Now, I could simply have said, Mr. Speaker, we don't have the information, and in order not to fall into assumption, you can ask the question next time. But in order to try to assist the House and the Honourable Gentleman, who does not often deserve assistance, I attempted to provide an answer that the Honourable Gentleman seems, the current leader of the GSD, seems to take objection to. Because, of course, I recall that he too was a member of the government that agreed the post-boxing arrangements, a member of who then left the party because of the joining of the Honourable Gentleman now to his right, and he made no bones of saying that that's why he was going. I made no bones of saying that that's why he was going. But, Mr. Speaker, look, I will not resile from the fact that I think the post-boxing arrangements were a bad thing, not a good thing. We took that position at the time, and we maintained that position, because the Honourable Gentleman reminds us that we marched to the frontier waving our passports and our identity cards, only to have been marched up the hill by Honourable Members when they were in government, and then marched down again to be told that our ID cards would change, and instead of featuring the word Gibraltar, would feature the word UK. On them. And that's how they got us to be recognized, by not being Gibraltar, by being UK on the card. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, let's understand what the post-boxing arrangement is. Instead of someone in authority in La Linea seeking information from someone in authority in Gibraltar, which information the European Union requires should flow between the respective competent authorities, the fellow in La Linea, under the arrangements that they did, sends his request to King Charles Street in London. That's what he has to understand. Look, in our view, and we expressed this view at the time, there could be no more genuflection to the colonialism of Gibraltar than a request to our competent authorities should be addressed to King Charles Street in London. And that's what they agreed. Now, Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman was part of that government, so I understand he has to defend this, right? But then when he was not part of that government and he was leading the PDP, he was the whip hand against the former leader of this House when the Cordoba arrangements were done. And the man sitting to his left was the supreme defender of those arrangements. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, the Chronicle was full of exchanges between them as to how the Cordoba arrangements were a concession to Spain, and how, in fact, the Honourable, the current leader of the GSD, was wrong in his analysis of what the then leader of the GSD and his cheerleaders in the GSD had agreed with Spain. Now, this makes for fascinating reading, and I've got it always to hand, Mr. Speaker, because there are some choice phrases that they used about each other at the time that one will no doubt wish to remind them of at some time. But look, I think that the Honourable Gentleman is wrong in the analysis that he does. I think his history is failing him in this respect, and I think it's better, Mr. Speaker, that if the Honourable Gentleman wants to ask further questions about this, instead of trying to highlight numbers in order to try and prove points which we will now gleefully tweet over and we'll give them his own inflection to the data in a way that his staunchest supporters, all those who used to support him in the time of the disgraceful behaviour in respect of the LNG facility, the cutting off of the electricity, etc., all of those, Mr. Speaker, who still support him with great vigour and great gusto, so be it. But look, I think the people of Gibraltar would rather have the facts. They'd rather understand why it is that the postbox still haunts us today and why it is that these things can't just be fixed from one government to another. Sometimes governments fix us with problems for good.
Mr. Speaker, I know the Chief Minister, the current leader of the GSLP, likes to hold the stage for quite a long time. But, you know, he has not answered the question. The question that I asked was very simple. I have shown him that the postbox cannot be the impediment, because either the 4,000 requests that were made by Spain have gone through the postbox and trickled down to Gibraltar, or they have come directly. Either route appears to work from Spain to Gibraltar, direct or indirect. My question simply is, why cannot it work the other way, either directly or through the postbox? His insistence on giving us some kind of warped, may I say, historical analysis of the effect of the postbox agreement is simply because he has no answer to the fact that there are 4,000 or 3,000 requests being made from Spain to Gibraltar directly or through the postbox, but none are going in the other direction. Is that not right?
Well, Mr. Speaker, as the current Chief Minister, the current leader of this House, and the current leader of the GSLP,
all of which I hold in great honour as a privilege, and temporarily, because I don't believe that I will hold them forever, and I am sufficiently versed in physics to know that I am likely to hold them for less now than I have held them since I took this office. So he doesn't need to worry about calling me current. I mean, it's different in his case, Mr. Speaker. It's different in his case because, of course, as we know, he put his leadership up for grabs. Then nobody decided to take the step, but there was plenty of talk about what might happen. And indeed, the talk continues. But never mind. You see, he doesn't need to worry about my seeing myself as not holding this post forever. It's something that I reconciled myself to on the very night that I took office. As honourable members who remember my acceptance speech at the Mackintosh Hall will no doubt recall. But, Mr. Speaker, the honourable gentleman believes that anyone who does not agree with him is warped. And that's a very dangerous way to see history, you see. Because we see things in a different way does not mean that we are warped. It means that we believe things to be different, and we don't describe their view as warped. We could describe it as mistaken because it's different to our view. Now, the Deputy Chief Minister remembers the demonstration, remembers the issue with the ID cards and the passports, and is a good reminder of the mistakes that honourable members made when they were in office. I will concede one thing to him. They made bigger mistakes once he'd left than they'd made whilst he was there. And we can get on to those if the honourable gentleman likes a little later or during the course of a debate. Because, of course, the arrival of the man to his left did something to that party, Mr. Speaker, from which they will never recover.
Mr. Speaker, just the final, please. This is my final.
May I ask you to resume and see just for a second? Just as a reminder, and I made a note of this, and I know the members are pretty eager to say their spiel and to get on with it and to question the government, but let me remind members that supplementary questions are allowed at the Speaker's discretion. So this will be the last question.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful, but if and from a sedentary position, the Chief Minister complains, and let me say that I was only calling him the current leader only in jest because he first called me the current leader, and he understands that. He knows that we get on, so it's not an issue. I do it in jest. But what he said from a sedentary position, that we're never going to finish. And let me say this, we're never going to finish because his answers are so long and take us not just as a meandering through every single highway and byway, but through little paths and up the rock and down the streams. It's impossible for him to actually give a straight answer to a straight question. My straight question simply was... There are 3,000 or 4,000 requests going to Gibraltar that are received in Gibraltar directly or through the postbox. Why don't they go the other way? It's not about the history lesson. It's about answering the fact as to the reason they do not go the other way. Does he have that reason?
Mr. Speaker, I really genuinely don't believe that the Honourable Gentleman was paying attention whilst the debate was ongoing. And I put it no higher or lower than the word debate, because I think the Honourable Mr. Feetham and I were erring into debate, which you, I'm grateful, allowed. But a lot of that he needs to read the Hansard for. But what I will tell him, Mr. Speaker, is that I don't take it in jest when he calls me the current leader.
because, I mean, if it's in jest, it's because he wants me to be permanent. And I don't want to be permanent. And therefore, I think we both understand, Mr. Speaker, that the roles we play today are the roles that we are required to play by dint of where our party members and our respective electorates have put us. And we must do our best whilst we hold these posts for whatever period we may hold them. You see, it is in the nature of the beast, and I say that generically, not to the Honourable Gentleman, with whom I get on very well, but it is in the nature of the political beast that we have in front of us in the political party that is the official opposition, that they will accuse us of giving long answers without the most minimal regard for how long their questions are. Very often our long answers are half the length of their very long questions. Mr. Speaker, far too often, honourable members don't like to hear it, but the facts are the facts. Let's take our measuring tape out and let's look at this particular version of Hansard.
So I have no answer. I've given you the answer. We had a discussion in the early part of what he said. If you look at what he read, it's in there. But you weren't listening then. It wasn't exciting.
Question number 422, the Honourable D.J. Bosino.
Can the Minister for Business state whether the bid proposal is still going ahead as planned?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, yes, sir.
Mr. Speaker, can you indicate when it is expected to be formally launched?
Mr. Speaker, the last I heard from the bid task working group was that they're looking to have their business plan ready for August this year, and then the ballot will take place in October of this year.
And, Mr. Speaker, can the Honourable Member confirm that the government is still committed to provide the pound-for-pound assistance by way of financial assistance?
We are 100% committed, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 423, the Honourable D.J. Bosino.
Can the Minister for Tourism provide further details of what he means when he refers to what the visitor face of Gibraltar should look like and how he proposes to change that?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 424.
Question number 424, the Honourable D.J. Bosino.
Can the Minister for Tourism provide the results of the assessment as to loss of business between the 1st of March and 31st of December 2020, which he said he carried out as part of the engagement with operators?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, along with most of my other questions on tourism in the session, they are obviously all prompted by my reply to question 26 of 2020. Much of my reply to that question was set of thoughts and analysis of the current situation and what may happen to destinations, including Gibraltar, as the worldwide tourism industry evolves in the light of the COVID-19 pandemic. So the Honourable Gentleman opposite must give this some thought. When we talk about the possible changing face of tourism in Gibraltar, this is not something that can be answered factually or with a clear vision at present, as this situation continues to change. In fact, it may evolve even when a clearer picture begins to emerge. What I meant by that reference to the changing face is that the traditional demographic of Gibraltar's visitor may change in the face of what COVID-19 has done to the tourism industry. It remains to be seen whether or not our visitor profile changes because of the pandemic. If it does, then this means that target marketing may change. Throughout lockdown and gathering the medical knowledge issued surrounding the nature of COVID-19 and those exposed as higher risk has revealed increased danger to the older segment of populations. Gibraltar's traditional customer base has historically been age 55 plus. This is also representative in the cruise passenger profile. It is widely reported that this segment of travellers will likely find travel insurance requirements harder to satisfy in addition to being the least likely to initiate booking overseas travel in the first wave once restrictions are removed. Therefore, in the period of operational business, before a workable vaccine or a treatment for this disease is available, it is likely that Gibraltar's mainstay audience will need to alter in line with the pool of travellers in the initial wave of travel. Mr. Speaker, The Honourable Gentle opposite likes to put words into my mouth which are simply not true. I did not say that I had carried out an assessment as to the loss of business operators may have had from 1st of March and going forward to the end of year as a forecast. I said that we had engaged with operators to assess the loss of business. This is a question that was posed to the industry. I cannot force members to the industry to reply on this matter, and I indeed have received no replies to this. However, it is clear that this pandemic has had very detrimental effect on the local tourism, hospitality, leisure and retail industry. It is also clear that once the FCO issued advice against all but essential travel, that the majority of bookings across the period of the guidance would have been eligible for cancellation. What is unclear is what percentage of these would rebook for 2021.
Speaker, as far as the last point the Honourable Member says, I really had no intention of putting words in his mouth. I was simply putting the point of asking the question on the back of the reply, which says we have already engaged with operators as to A, and he lists five points, and it says assessing loss of business between the 1st of March to the 31st of December 2020. In relation to that, can you confirm that then there is no statistical evidence which you could share with this House, which we could analyse?
Mr. Speaker, I did not say that I had carried out an assessment. What I did say was, and I'm going to quote from my answer of last time. Yeah, I have already engaged with operators as to assessing loss of business March 1st to December 31st. Nobody has come back to me with any information. I've asked them whether they want to provide the information. It's up to them. It's not that I've carried out an assessment.
Speakers, I'd like to thank the Minister for the reply. That's the answer, so be it. Speaker, going back to the initial part of his question, in relation to the visitor face, where he seems to indicate that it's driven by COVID, but I got the impression that it may have been something more, that the government may have adopted some sort of policy decision in relation to this whereby they were driving it themselves, clearly in reaction to COVID, but that they had some sort of firm policy, substantive policy decision to change the visitor face of basically Gibraltar visitors. And in relation to that specific point, Mr. Speaker, he says in his answer to, and he's right that most of these questions arise from the answer, the very lengthy answer which he gave me to in answer to one of my questions about tourism policy in the future. He talks about the future face of Gibraltar's tourism product must in all events be sustainable. And then he says, we may need to look to technologies to help us achieve this. In what way?
Well, first of all, Mr. Speaker, when he says so be it, the reason is that he doesn't seem to like the fact that he seems to have made a mistake on what I actually said. But anyway, so be it. So we move on. When I speak of the changing face of the customer, what I'm referring to is that Gibraltar has been used to a certain age group of visitors, which is normally the 55 plus. At the moment, in a situation where tourism is always changing, we really, if you speak to people all over the world, I mean, nobody has sort of a fine idea of where we're going. And Gibraltar will have to change as time goes on. So we might have a situation where over the next 6 months or so, we might have people who want to visit Gibraltar who are younger. So when I speak of the changing face, that is what I mean. The face change is the type of customer that we have. We might have a different kind of customer. When in the past it's been an older customer, customer who was over 55, we might have a younger profile, a younger audience.
William, I really am not trying to provoke the minister to come up with the nature of the replies he's coming up with. I'm really genuinely asking the questions for further particulars of the answers he's given, and he needs to rest assured that I'm not trying to catch him out. And in relation to that point that he makes, is it he also said in his answer where he talks about more valuable volume of traffic or higher yield, and there was a question mark to that at the end of that statement. He hasn't mentioned that in his reply. Is he looking at basically perhaps maybe even less visitors, but who have greater spending power? And if so, how is he thinking at this stage? I know it's very early stages to achieve that.
Look, at the moment, what we're doing is we're trying to look at all different ways of marketing Gibraltar. Things are changing. It's not the same. In the past, we've marketed Gibraltar by actually visiting trade fairs. We visited the World Travel Market. We've visited other trade fairs. But things are changing. We're now looking to market Gibraltar online, as I explained in my answer the last sitting, and you have an answer here on the order paper on that. We've had to change in webinars is one of the things that everybody seems to be going down that road of where Gibraltar is now virtual. We have virtual rooms where people visit those virtual rooms and they see what Gibraltar is all about. It's very difficult to pin down at this moment in time on how we can achieve that, because whenever we try, all we hit is tend to hit brick walls, because people don't know what is happening, how things are changing, what will happen next in 2 weeks' time. We don't know. So we just have to be ready and prepared to change with the time.
Next question.
Question number 425, the Honourable DJ Vecino.
Can the Minister for Tourism state when he expects to be in a position to launch the virtual destination platform?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the virtual destination platform was launched on Friday the 5th of June on the Tourist Board's website. I'm surprised the Honourable Gentleman was not already aware of this.
No, Mr. Speaker, and I wasn't aware of it, and indeed I haven't had an opportunity to look at it. So the Kennedy, but I will do so after this meeting. Can the Honourable Member state what the main message is in that website in terms of the marketing drive in it? Unless I've misunderstood what the virtual platform is meant to be achieving.
Mr. Speaker, I suggest he looks at it and sees what a great product we've put together. But the main thrust of it is marketing. We're marketing Gibraltar, new videos, new products. We're aimed at primarily at the UK market, because that is what we're targeting at the moment.
Can you say to him in what way? Is he because I know that he and I have had a discussion during the lockdown in relation to this. Is the main thrust or drive of the marketing campaign that Gibraltar, for example, has done well throughout the crisis and therefore for that reason is a safe destination to visit, for example?
Yes, of course, Mr. Speaker. Remember that people like to see new pictures. People like to see new products. And I'm not sure how long we've had the sort of the older version of on our website since. When was the last time we changed it? It hasn't changed since I became Minister for Tourism. So I wanted to give it a revamp, especially with COVID, when there was less sort of work within tourism. So we took that opportunity to change things and make it look a lot better.
Grateful for that answer. Is the Minister able to give me an indication as to what the cost of the launch of the of this platform has been to date? And indeed, if there are any ongoing costs to that?
Mr. Speaker, I wouldn't want to give a firm answer because I've got an idea, but I wouldn't want to give a firm answer to Parliament. So if he wants, I can write back to him and let him know what the exact cost was.
Question number 426, the Honourable DJ Vecino.
Can the Minister for Tourism state when he expects to be in a position to launch the marketing drive in Spain?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, the marketing drive in Spain is being launched in July this month.
I was going to say it's already been launched. Mr. Speaker, can he? He says his in July. Does he have a precise date? And secondly, and this is perhaps the more important supplementary question. Again, in relation to the cost, does he have an idea of? Does he have that information available?
Mr. Speaker, I do have an idea, but I can't give you specifics because we're doing a few things. We're doing TV. social media and radio.
And can he state how long he expects this marketing drive to continue for?
The initial idea, Mr. Speaker, is 2 months.
And similar to the other, the virtual platform question, can he state whether there is any uniformity as to the message? Is it the same message comes to Gibraltar, it's a safe place, new products, or is it another message which is more specifically driven to the Spanish market?
It's actually conoces y rancar. Speaker, from what I've been told is that the Gibraltar Tourist Board has not previously marketed Gibraltar in Spain, you know, because they've thought that perhaps people come to Gibraltar anyway, and based on that. But because of COVID and the staycation idea, with people in Spain staying in Spain, I thought that perhaps it would be good to encourage those people who might come from further afield and come down to the Costa or come down to the Campo de Gibraltar, that they could visit Gibraltar at the same time. There are many people who actually haven't visited Gibraltar. They live in nearby area, but actually haven't visited Gibraltar. So we thought it would be a good idea to encourage them to visit Gibraltar.
Yes. Speaker, as presumably as part of that marketing drive, again, I'll see it when it's launched, no doubt. But presumably the shopping experience will also feature as a central feature of that aspect of that drive.
Well, actually, not, Mr. Speaker. It's just part of it. My main emphasis on this campaign is our Britishness, because I think it's important that the Spaniard can see the difference, because we're different, we're British. We wanted to sell the idea that they're visiting Gibraltar and they're visiting part of Britain. They're coming here to see the apes, they're coming here to see the Union Jack, they're coming here to see the changing of the guards, they're coming here to see the bobbies, they're coming here to see our red telephone boxes. They're not coming here to have tapas or of that sort.
Question number 427, the Honourable DJ Vosino.
Can the Minister for Tourism provide evidence of the level of interest that was shown in Gibraltar as a travel destination at the virtual exhibition hosted by the Association of National Tourist Officers and Representatives on the 8th of June?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, 187 agents took part in the first virtual exhibition hosted by ANTOR on the 8th of June. Gibraltar was one of the 27 destinations with virtual rooms available on those days. The tourist board was joined by Sanborn Gibraltar and was able to present face-to-face with 10 agents across the session time. A further 140 agents downloaded Gibraltar's fact file and viewed the video, and from this pool of interested agents, a further destination webinar slot for 30-minute destination presentation is scheduled to take place in the near future to discuss the product and how Gibraltar is opening up post-COVID-19 lockdown.
Can I just receive clarification in respect of two figures, Mr. Speaker? There was one where he said that there were some views. He mentioned a number, but I didn't quite catch that. And secondly, he said, can he confirm that there were 187 agents? Presumably, are they travel agents? And then, if that's confirmed, I see that the minister nods. Whether how that tallies with the answer which you gave at the last meeting, that invitations were sent out to over 3,000 travel agents. Would he be disappointed with that result, or is he happy with it?
Mr. Speaker, this is hosted by ANTOR. So, I mean, we are, I mean, it's not, you know, the invitation wasn't really sent out by us. So I mean, we would have wanted more agents to take part, but I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, middle of a pandemic, I suppose people have not wanted to participate as much as we would have preferred. And like I said, I think the other question that you were asking was that Gibraltar was one of the 27 destinations with virtual rooms.
Question number 428, the Honourable DJ Vosino.
Is the Minister for Tourism in a position to now state when EasyJet will resume its services to Gibraltar? Mr. Speaker, this question was filed, as you, the Speaker will know, before it was announced then in the press.
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, as I already announced, EasyJet will resume some flying from Manchester on Monday the 20th of July and London Gatwick Saturday the 25th of July.
Question number 429, the Honourable DJ Vosino.
Again, this question, I think, has been superseded slightly by events when I... I'll read it out. It's, can the Minister for Small Businesses advise this House what plans the government has to assist retail businesses in the immediate term after the COVID measures end? By the COVID measures, I was referring to the initial ones and not the ones which were announced by the government recently.
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Business, Tourism and Transport.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't get your last bit. I'll read out the answer as we have it. The government, in consultation with CELAC, is constantly reviewing the measures by which it can continue to generally assist retail business. As Gibraltar unlocks and the rest of the world unlocks, we will need to monitor how the economy starts to pick up. I'd just like to add that, as you know, that we've announced BEAT 2.0, and that will assist retail businesses.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House should now adjourn to Monday, the 20th of July at 4 p.m.
I now propose a question, which is that this House do now adjourn to Monday, the 20th of July at 4 p.m. I now put the question, which is that this House do now adjourn to Monday, the 20th of July at 4 p.m. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Passed. The House will now adjourn to Monday, the 20th of July at 4 p.m.